Welcome back to another episode of Secrets in Nature. My name is Lexi, and the episode that I'm going to share with you today, the super juicy, been wanting an episode like this for a long time, this interview is probably the most vulnerable that I've ever been on this podcast. And if not that, then the most vulnerable that I've ever been in my entire life. Sarah has been on this podcast before. She is an amazing person. She is just a gem lighting up the Philly area. And I felt so called to have her back on because some of the things that we talk about in this podcast interview, some of the topics, some of the questions that I ask, some of the stories that we tell, they are topics that should be way more normalized to talk about, in my opinion. And I felt so called to kind of start talking about sexuality on the podcast because I think that a huge part of my purpose and a huge part of why I even do the podcast to begin with, I do it to bring my unique perspective to the world in addition to the unique perspectives of others. I think that starting conversations like this and starting to normalize these topics, it's really important to me and really fulfilling. And Sarah is just doing amazing things out in the world. And I kind of wanted to have her come back on, talk about some of the newer things she's been doing. Before, when I had her on previously, Rachel and I interviewed her. She talked about her aura photography business and her breathwork business. And we do dive a little bit more into breathwork in this interview, which I'm so excited about because the last time that I interviewed her, I didn't even have a breathwork practice. And I've since kind of began to implement it. So we do a little bit more of a deep dive into the breath work, and we talk about her latest endeavor as a sensual wellness coach. And I just had so many questions regarding what that even meant, and she so beautifully answered all of it. We even talk about the menstrual cycle and how we can tap into that to kind of live our best lives. So we really went everywhere. We talked about all of the things that really get me excited and make me feel really passionate. So this is just a fantastic interview. And as I said, I do get extremely vulnerable in this interview, but I know that the story that I tell, I know that it's something that I'm meant to learn from and alchemize in a way that will in the end allow me to live the best possible life. My teenage self would seriously be like screaming, crying, throwing up if she knew I was about to like publish this and send it out into the world. But I feel so good about it. I know that it's the right thing to do. And I hope that you enjoy this episode. I hope that maybe it inspires you to speak about something that maybe you've been feeling shame around or do something a bit out of your comfort zone. Maybe read a new book that you wouldn't necessarily have picked up on your own. I know Sarah mentions quite a few books in this episode that she has learned a lot from. We really just go there in this episode. We talk about how sexuality and breathwork are connected, how sexuality and creativity are connected. And most importantly, we talk about what it looks like to alchemize shame that so many women probably carry around the topic of sexuality. This interview is very special to me. Some of the things that we talk about, I've had written in my phone for so long, knowing that I wanted to talk about them in front of this microphone, and I just didn't know when that would be. Like, the idea of speaking it out loud terrified me. The idea of creating this episode was so terrifying, and I didn't know when I was going to get around to doing it. I didn't know when I was going to, like, have the courage. But here we are, and it's a Secrets in Nature summer. The series of interviews that we're kind of like in the midst of right now, all so good, so many special people, and I am so honored to bring every single one of their perspectives to this podcast. So before we get into it, my new little segment that I wanted to start implementing as of last week, each episode I want to kind of talk a little bit about the things that I've been doing to support my menstrual cycle lately, just so listeners can take inspiration from it. Maybe they can pass it on to someone they love if they're not going to use it themselves. Just trying to hold myself accountable and share what I've been doing because it's my favorite thing to talk about, as you might know already. And Sarah actually brought up the menstrual cycle all on her own during this interview in the ways that she's been kind of working with it to create her best life, which I loved that she brought up because, of course, it's my favorite topic. So I just finished my period. Day two of my follicular phase was yesterday, and I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast yet, but Cody got me an ice bath. to keep at the house for my birthday, which is crazy because that's literally been on my vision board. Like, I made a vision board back in maybe February or March, and I had a photo of an ice bath on it because I wanted my own. Like, I wanted one to keep in the backyard. And he got one for me for my birthday. And Sunday mornings, you already know, Sundays are for the ice bath. We went to the store, we got 6 bags of ice, and we did the ice bath yesterday morning. And it was such an invigorating, energizing way to kick off my follicular phase. Normally, I would immediately like go back to the gym and start lifting weights again, just because I'm so excited to start lifting again after not going to the gym for a week. And even today, I skipped to the gym yet again. I interviewed Sarah instead, but it just has felt so good letting the energy and the creativity flow. It actually is perfect because Sarah and I do talk about in this interview how women are different literally every day. And I've noticed that not even every cycle feels the same for me. Like, days 1 and 2 of my follicular phase just kind of feel different this month. I normally would be like feeling like a sack of shit not going to the gym, but I feel so good and I feel so energized in different ways. I will go back to the gym tomorrow, don't get me wrong, but I don't know. I'll say it once and I'll say it again, but I love being a woman. I love feeling these energy shifts. It's just like no other feeling, and I love just like riding the wave. Anyway, this is Secrets in Nature. Again, my name is Lexi. This is the podcast where we talk about all of the ways that humans affect nature and nature affects humans. Please follow me on Instagram at Secrets in Nature Podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're new and write me a review on Apple Podcasts because it would be so helpful and so appreciated. I hope that you are having a lovely day or night wherever you are in the world. I am so excited for you to hear this interview. I'll be sure to link all of Sarah's info below in the show notes. She is an amazing human and just another example of someone that after talking to on this podcast, I happily like handed my money to, honestly, because I love everything she stands for. I love everything that she's doing and the way that she shares her gifts with the world. Like, we need people like her. So without further ado, this is Alchemizing Shame Around Sexuality with Sarah Silverstein. All right. So welcome, Sarah Silverstein, to Secrets in Nature. Welcome back, I should say. And you recently announced your engagement on Instagram. So congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's very exciting. I can't believe it's happened for me. I was one of those girls who was like, yo, it's not going to happen. And it's okay. It's okay. And then
And here you are.
Human.
Well, you're the first guest that I've ever asked to be on the podcast a second time. And I've interviewed some amazing people, and I literally always have every intention of having more conversations with them down the line. But you're the first person so far that I actually reached out to because some of the topics we're going to talk about today, I genuinely just like felt so called to talk about. And you were the perfect person to talk about them with. So please, how are you? Are you ready for this conversation? Tell us about any life updates you might have. Let's hear about your life.
We are very ready for this conversation. I have been expanding my business from, you know, prior we spoke about aura photography, and I have recently launched my sexuality business in Philly. And so that's been a fun expansion on top of getting engaged and figuring out the rest of life and enjoying just the hell out of summer, you know, being a little bit more present. A little less work mode, but slowly but surely finding that delightful balance. And I'm happy to be back here again with you.
Yay. Oh my gosh, you're thriving. You're truly thriving. And my next question was going to be, tell us where your passions lie, the amazing ways you use your gifts to serve the community, because there are so many. You mentioned the aura photography. I recently subscribed to your breathwork, your weekly breathwork sessions, which is, I can't wait to dive into that as well. The sexuality business. What even is the sexuality business? You have to share.
So I've been a breathwork facilitator for the last 7 years, basically helping people with anxiety and stress management, just start helping them understand their own nervous system and how they can take care of themselves. And that's been really fun. And when I got into it, there weren't a lot of people understanding it or teaching it. And it's just been slowly expanding, which is really exciting. And as things expand, that means the market is saturated. So I needed to find my niche. And so when I was living back in Bali, my best friend is a female sexuality specialist on top of a litany of other things. And she was like, girl, come do my training. And I was like, what? Being someone who has always shied away from that topic, you know, I think it's something that we're all told that we, you know, chase sex, make sure your body's looking good, doing this, attracting that, find the partner, But when it comes down to talking about the nitty gritty of things, there's a big block there. And there's a lot of shame that that I found people carry around, myself included, when I got into it. So as I started to study and understand everything a little bit more, I was like, oh my gosh, the amount of people that I'll be able to help, especially the Americans who are like, yo, we don't know how to talk about this. It's been really fun to kind of jump into that. So I am certified to be a sex coach and a female sexuality specialist with a focus in yoni masseuse, which is an internal and external massage of your body and your yoni, which is the Sanskrit word basically for your vulva and your vagina. So just going into there and kind of exploring and looking for a variety of different things, but most importantly, any blockages that may be there, any trauma that's being stored in the body. How do we, you know, combine breath work and the sexuality into one thing to then continue to help people moving forward. But a lot of it goes based on the individual. Where are they at? What do they need? What are they struggling with? There's so much going on underneath the surface that we rarely talk about on a day-to-day life because it's vulnerable, or people will feel uncomfortable, or a litany of other experiences and feelings. And it's like, all right, how do we normalize this? What does that look like? How can I be useful? So that's what my main focus has been for the past 2.5 years. And now finally finishing the training, I'm here offering it in Philly and online.
Amazing. And thank you so much for doing these things, because not a whole lot of people are bringing that to the mainstream. So thank you for what you're doing. And I want to focus on, I definitely want to talk about the sexuality part. That'll be the second half of the interview, but just kind of like as a warm up to like get it going before we get into the juicier stuff. I do want to circle back and talk about breath work, because I have a lot more to say now than I did the last time I interviewed you, because the last time that I interviewed you, I had never even done breath work. And not only have I started doing the weekly sessions, but I've gone to like a couple workshops. So I have a lot more to say. And let's start there. So how would you describe what your weekly sessions look like for anyone that might not have done them? And how does it transform lives?
I mean, breathwork is, it's like kind of the umbrella, right? So there's a lot of different things that can go on underneath the surface of it. So my membership has been primarily focused on doing mini sessions to help people manage their stress and anxiety as they go into the week ahead. And as of this past week, as we're getting into August time, we're switching. But basically, it's just kind of an opportunity for me to provide some tools that people may not be aware of. So there's upregulation and downregulation. There's 360 breathing, where you're kind of incorporating both into it. But if we're talking about downregulation, that's going to be more for focusing on how to manage your stress and anxiety. Most of us are living in the sympathetic side of our nervous system, which is our fight or flight response. So we're constantly going and moving and worrying about everything else and not paying attention to our own innate bodies. And so it's like, all right, how do we quiet that down? How do we start to understand that like our stress and anxiety are manageable, but we just don't know how. So it's almost like, all right, here are a few breathing tools to help with that. If we're focusing on upregulation, that's going to be more about kind of shifting all of the energetic energy within our bodies. So that's going to be much more of a quicker pace breath, probably a little bit deeper than usual. And when we breathe like that, we're sending more oxygen into the body than it usually knows what to do with. So an array of experiences can happen. It can be tingling, warm, cold, tightness, whatever it is. Everything is energetically linked into something else. So I usually dive in with that with certain individuals and just talking about, all right, where are some blockages? What are some things from the past that are holding you back? So I use upregulation breathwork to kind of shift and move. Trauma is the easiest kind of way to say that, of like, all right, how do we move that forward? A lot of people are hip to therapy now, which is really awesome. And that's going to be tackling the mind side of things. But breathwork is a somatic practice. So somatic just basically means in the body. So when you start to do a body practice along with therapy or something where you're like talking things up, that's where it's like that link can happen. And then healing can actually start to take place. And at least that was my experience of being in therapy for 100 years, being like, yo, okay, cool. I've got great awareness, but now what? What does this look like from here? And then it was like, all right, let's see how this starts to change things. And for me, breathwork was just moving mountains, and it was like, whoa. And it was quick too. It wasn't something that I needed to wait. And like traditional seated meditation has a litany of benefits, but for me, who is constantly go, 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 how do I slow down? How do I allow those, you know, intrusive thoughts to really quiet down? And for me, when you focus on the breath, it's hard for my brain to kind of keep ticking forward. So it's much less like, all right, the mind is super quiet. Here I am, nice and present. And then I kind of get to move those mountains energetically. But it's just about finding what works for you. And often I'll listen to a podcast, or I'll talk to somebody who's trying a new modality, and they're like, oh my God, it changed my life. And it's like, cool. That may not be everyone's experience, but I always suggest that people, you know, give it a go, try it out, see if it could work for you. Because also, once you start to understand how to use your breath in your body, you then don't need to continue to lean on people all the time. So I always tell clients, I'm like, I don't want to see you more than 6 times. Like, if we're on maintenance, then fine. But like, don't get hooked on this, because at your core, you know exactly what you need. You might just not have the right toolkit right now.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting, because it's almost like the amount of healing that can be done when you simply like take your analytical mind out of it. Like, your mind is like hardly even involved, and you're just like letting your body do its thing. But I want to talk about just what the week, like doing it on a weekly basis and having that moment for yourself. It's so unique, because the first time I ever did breath work was at like a workshop event, and it was holotropic breath work. So it was super intense. It was my first time doing it. And I thought it was amazing. I was like, oh my gosh, it literally feels like I'm on drugs right now just from breathing, right? And so that was all well and great and everything. But implementing a weekly practice is so different, because things start to come up. And to be fully transparent, I like haven't done it for maybe the past couple of months, because it was getting so uncomfortable and I was getting so frustrated with some of the things coming up. And I know that like, if I want to get through it, I have to go through it and not around it. Like, I totally get that one day I will have to come back to it. But a topic that I really wanted to get into today was stored trauma in the body, because it's so fascinating to me. And I really want you to help me understand, because I'm really starting to believe like that's where my discomfort was coming from. Because like in the midst of the breath work, I would have like such an overwhelm of like this infuriating feeling that like my chest wasn't opening enough during it. And yeah. I was like arching my back during it, like severely arching my back, like basically going full on exorcist mode. And it was like making me emotional in the middle of the breath work, like just pure frustration of my chest not feeling open enough. Mm. So now like I'm really starting to feel like, do I have stuck emotions in there? Like, what is going on? So I'm just like kind of having a hard time understanding like how it works. Like, how do people get to this point of having stored emotions or trauma in their bodies?
Yeah. So I just kind of want to normalize your experience right now. The whole purpose of breathwork is to have a release of some sort. Some sort of emotion is going to want to come up to the surface. So when we have this kind of like excessive control over what it should look like, what it should feel like, that's where we really start to like block ourselves from feeling more. So if we think about it, our minds are super smart, right? Like, they're always going. It can kind of let us know what direction we need to go. What do we need to say? How do we need to show up? But our bodies don't have the verbal way of being like, yo, this is what's going on. And unless it's like in a lot of pain, right? So right. For me, breathwork situations, yeah, they're never easy, right? Like, when I dive into them, I'm like, oh, okay, here we are. This is uncomfortable. And that's okay. And it's like remembering that you have autonomy. So if you don't want to go deeper, you don't have to. If you want to keep it a little bit more low level, you get to. And I try to like look at it kind of like going into like the ocean, like little bit by little bit, you know, rather than like full blown jumping. Cause it's like, yo, that can feel really scary. And that can throw your nervous system out of whack too. We have a thing called the window of tolerance. And basically, when we're out of that window of tolerance, we don't really know how to respond to things properly, because either we're super hyper-focused or moving way too fast, or the opposite. We're like, nope, I'm not doing that. I'm just going to sit here and be frozen. It's like paying attention to what those energies are actually doing. And basically, the idea of stored trauma in the body comes from when we go through a particular experience and our nervous system is out of whack, we don't know what to do with it. It's really hard then. So what we do is our body, mind, soul, and spirit are always going to go to protect us. So basically it will close that experience down. And I don't know if you've ever had this happen where like you're in a confrontation with someone and you're just like done, right?
Like shut down.
100%. So that's a great example of being out of your window of tolerance. And I hit this, and as my partner and I are starting to plan our wedding, we're hitting it left, right, and center, because we want different things and we love each other, but also at the same time, we want to advocate for ourselves. So I keep hitting this wall of where I'm like, okay, I want to show up and I want to do these things. But then at the same time, I don't feel seen or heard or safe. So what my body is going to do is be like, okay, here we go. We're going to close down until we feel safe enough again to open back up. There's a really good book called The Body Keeps the Score by something Vesser Colt, I believe. It's on my bookshelf. But it basically breaks down all of these ideas of what this trauma is. It's a super intense book. It's kind of like a textbook. So it gets a little nerdy and hard to follow. But basically, if we think about it, all of our lived experiences are with us all the time. And as someone who has overcome alcoholism and abusive relationships, narcissistic relationships, pretty awful parents, like, it gets to this point where it's really hard for my body to feel safe and comfortable. And as I've been on this like reparenting experience or learning how to take care of myself, it's like looking at some of those situations and being fearless enough to be like, okay, cool. I'm probably not 12 years old again. I'm not going to be at a point where I'm depending on other people to take care of me who aren't. So can I give myself permission to go into that previous experience with someone who knows what they're doing, have them guide me there and have me kind of have a new dialogue with that so I can like kind of fix that and move that out of my body, because now I know I am safe. I am okay. I am taking care of myself. Sure, my parents did the best that they could. However, in that moment, that little younger version of me didn't feel safe. So instead, I learned that when people raise their voice, I'm going to cower. When something bad is going on between my parents, I know to become invisible. And I don't have to do that in my present relationships, right? So like when my partner and I get into a disagreement, which is inevitable because we're human beings, I don't have to fully run away from him. I simply have to say, hey, I'm really uncomfortable right now. Hey, this is actually what I'm feeling in my body. And I didn't understand what it meant to feel in my body until I got into this somatic practice of where I was like, oh, interesting. When I'm in confrontation with someone, my liver will start to hurt. And I'm like, that's so weird. And then energetically and spiritually in Eastern medicine, they say that we carry anger in our liver. So I thought it was really cool to like start to find these things that would match up. And then I was like, all right, let me nerd out. So while you're talking about going through breath work and having the back of your body kind of open up, what I think is really interesting is both sides of us, right, are going to be our heart chakra. So as we're breathing in there, you might feel closed off here, which is going to be, you know, like how you're showing your heart to everyone, but the backside is actually the vulnerable side. So when that starts to arch open, it could be that there is a blockage or that it's open, you know,
and like doing it as you're talking.
Right. It's A-okay. You can always just move your body and see like, what does it want to do? And for anyone who's listening while I talk, if your body starts to feel tense in different ways, tend to it, listen to it, give yourself permission to stretch or yawn or shake or do whatever it is that you need. Because your body's just trying to tell you like, hey, something's a little bit off here. How can you tend to it? So when the back of the heart stuff happened to me and I was practicing with my first teacher, he was like, were you stabbed in the back? Did people betray you? And I was like, no, how dare you? Like, how dare you? And then I was like, okay, right. That did happen. So even that like little body information that I'm getting in the breathwork experience, I like to journal afterwards and be like, okay, this came up. My teacher said that it might be in relation to this. Where in my life do I remember that? Can I go back to that moment with kindness and loving for myself and be like, all right, what did I maybe not say in that conversation? Am I carrying that behavior into my life today? Because usually when we have this, you know, these stored experiences, trauma, whatever you want to call it within us, we just kind of need to reface it and be like, oh, is that one thing that happened a decade ago still causing me to be blocked off from people today? Because me in my current form with all the different things that I have done, it's different. So I don't need to close down when somebody raises their voice. I can simply say, hey, it really doesn't feel good to be yelled at. Would you mind lowering your voice rather than full like wall or just walking away completely? And it's like, right. Communication for me is the foundation that we stand upon for all things to happen. And the more that I can understand what's happening within my vessel, the more I can communicate that with others, because no one's a mind reader. And I don't think anyone in my life today, at least for the way that I built it, that are trying to cause harm to me. So I can usually say, hey, this feels weird. This is going on. And I mean, golly, I've got decades of nonsense to still kind of look at and process through with breathwork and other modalities. But it's like being patient with yourself, listening to the body, listening to those experiences. And also, even as you're saying, yeah, I took a little bit of a break. You get to. People constantly ask me, well, how many times do you breathe a week? Golly, at this rate, it's been 7 years. If I'm breathing every week, then probably I'm not implementing things, you know? So for me, it's certainly less frequent, but I do drop into my breath when I do start to feel anxious, because as much as I can talk, I have social anxiety through the roof and I need to be like, okay, right. I'm okay in this moment. So it's just a tool to listen and to see what needs to be shifted, what's actually happening in that body of yours.
I love that you brought up just like revisiting like your past self or your child self, because I recently saw the Barbie movie. I don't know if you saw it, but it made
me. Not yet, I want to.
It was a healing experience. I literally went home and like wrote a letter to my child self when I got home, and I was like crying the whole time, and it was just like so healing. So do you think, because I guess when I think of like the breathing and feeling stuck in my chest, you know way more about breathwork than I do, of course. I guess I just kind of hoped that like, okay, maybe if it's something that I get back on track and I keep doing it, I'll just get it flowing, you know, like things will just kind of, the blockages will just kind of heal themselves. But you're kind of looking at it as like a maybe journal on it, like go back to maybe an incident that happened or a time where you felt unsafe. Do you think it needs to be both, or can it be one or the other? Like what does that look like?
I think it comes down to the individual and the experience. For me, I don't want to just band-aid something. I really want to heal a wound. So if I feel like it's something that's going to require a little bit of a deeper experience, I'm going to spend the time with it. I'm going to pull out the books. I'm going to journal. I'm going to, you know, do mini little breath meditations where I'm really pushing everything out of my body. If I feel like it's something that I'm holding on to, I'm going to bring it up in therapy. I'm going to talk about it with my friends. I'm not somebody who can heal by themselves. I need somebody else to shine a light on it. So thankfully I've got a lot of trusted friends who can be like, hey, this feels like you're a little off here, or it seems like you're a little short here. And I'll be like, shoot, you're right. I need your help. Right. So it's like all of these different things with the right combination will get you to that end point, but it does require a lot of fearlessness and a lot of tenacity to be like, well, why is this coming up? And not trying to like dull it or push it away, but really kind of face it and be like, all right, well, this is coming up for a reason. I wonder what it is. So I really always encourage people just to stay curious, because you never know what you might feel and where it might lead you, or what conversation might open up. Or maybe you're going through that to have that conversation with somebody else who's having something similar and they never felt safe enough to talk about it. I think, you know, the past few years, we've realized the importance of connection and how do we weave that in? What does that look like? And as we're all back to our very big, normal, busy lives, what does it look like to slow down, to get vulnerable, to open up, and then give yourself permission to expand from there?
So you said that anger is like typically stored in the liver. Is there a specific emotion that is stored in the chest?
Well, if we think about this, so this chest space in, you know, chakra lands is going to be our heart chakra, right? So this is going to be around giving and receiving love. How are you showing up in those with yourself? How are you showing up in that with your relationships with other people? Do previous experiences that you've had like helped you build walls around you to maybe not let romantic interest in, or maybe you want to keep yourself safe because you've been cheated on or treated poorly or whatever it may be. Like, what does it look like to tap into that heart space? What does love feel like to you? What does compassion feel like to you? And I always bring people back to, you know, the first most important relationship is, what is that with yourself? What's your relationship like to self-love? What does it look like to say, I love myself? And maybe if you're not there yet, maybe it's, what is your relationship like to even thinking that you could love yourself? Because my first teacher ever who got me into all of this asked me that in our like clarity chat before I decided I was going to work with her. And she was like, well, do you love yourself? And girl, I turned to her and I was like, bleep, bleep, bleep. No, like I was still like really hard, like still in corporate land and like just a tough broad. And I was like, that's not important. Like, that has nothing to do with this. And she was like, oh, darling.
She's like, you're wrong.
Yeah. She's like, it does. It does. And the joys of working with Dana was like, she never said that I was wrong or I needed to do something. She just like very lovingly was like, oh, darling, like, okay, let's dive a little bit deeper. What, you know, what's going on underneath the surface with that? Because I think we are so black and white in our thinking that we forget the importance of remaining curious. Okay, what does it feel like to bristle with antagonism around love or around being, you know, open and trusting other people? Like, how do we soften those edges so true connection can actually happen? And this is my favorite book. It's called Heal Your Body by Louise Hay. And basically, you can go in for like any ailment of what's going on, and then it's going to say what potentially it could be linked to, and then an affirmation that you can say. So there's always like all these like fun ways to kind of bop back and forth. And this has kind of been my guidebook for understanding the body a little bit better, along with like Chinese medicine. But there's always something going on. And it's just like, all right, how deep do you want to dig? Do you want to actually get rid of that wound, or you just want to like make it through the day? And sometimes it's make it through the day. Right. So sometimes that just means it's going to be, let's soften that breath. Let's soften your edges. Let's allow yourself a moment to just drop in and then continue forward with your day. And if you got more time, then yeah, let's get to the nitty gritty. Let's go in.
Yeah. It's so fascinating. All of the ways that all the meaning that can be behind like certain ailments in the body, like if you're having something with the left side of your body and that's connected to your right brain, and that could be like something wounded in your feminine side, and then like vice versa, like if it's on the right side of your body and your left brain and your masculine, like it's all so fascinating. So kind of like a segue just from breath work into sexuality, you've recently started implementing the sensuality aspect into the weekly session. So what's the response been like? Like, what do your clients love it? Do they hate it? What's going on?
The DMs are definitely popping off a little bit more with that, because it does bring up a lot to the surface. And so with the latest iteration of the membership starting tomorrow, it's going to be the fact that it's going to be open to people who identify as female or who have vulvas. And I want to dive a little bit deeper into these topics, because I also think in the realm of, you know, female sexuality, it's something that hasn't been studied recently, really. Like, I think in the 70s or 80s, they started to understand like our hormones and diving in a little bit deeper with that. If you think about that in the time of humanity, that is not that long ago.
No, it's not.
It's really, really crazy. And also a lot of the studies have been incorrect. So they're kind of redoing all of that. So as more things are coming out, as more people are writing and being a little bit more progressive on this, it's creating more space for us to dive in a little bit more with that. And what does that look like for each individual human? So we've had a few sessions around erotic blueprint and what does it look like for your sexuality in that realm? What does it look like to find pleasure in your day-to-day life and translate that into the bedroom? Because if we think that our sex lives are its own separate entity, we're fools. Everything in our lives are deeply linked in together. And, you know, like when I'm experiencing really, you know, stressful week at work, the likelihood of me being interested in being intimate with my partner is slim. And for me, I was always like, well, I'm just like focused on work. And it's actually, no, like physiologically in our body, what's going to happen is that we're going to focus our energy where it needs to go so we can continue moving forward. So there's a book called Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski, where she talks about, you know, our brakes and what causes us to put our brakes on and what allows us to take our foot off that break so we can be a little bit more sensual, a little bit more open, and, you know, maybe prone for some sexuality time. But it's really interesting just to start to kind of break that down, because we've had so many like pressures on us for so long. And especially for women who are in heterosexual relationships where they feel like they have to give their partner X, Y, and Z. And it's like, no. Thank God it's 2023 and we have the ability to use our voices. However, it's still one of the biggest blockages that I've seen when I am working with people who identify as female or with vulvas, because it's like, yo, our throat chakras are blocked. Speaking up for ourselves is not something that we know. And it's like, if we do say no to this person in that moment, then what does that mean for our relationship? Or if I say no to this person and we have our third date when we should feel like we are being sexual now, like, will they not like us? And I just think it's really fascinating kind of like breaking all of this down. And the fact that most women don't understand that we're cyclical beings. We change every day. Our hormones are changing every day. So if we're not paying attention to that, of course we're going to be off kilter. Of course we're going to be perceived as quote unquote crazy, right? Because if the world around us doesn't understand that we're changing every day and we're expected to live every day as if we are the same, we're going to be off. Like, it's just very natural. So the amount of times, like, I look to my partner, I'm like, babe, we are premenstrual. This is what's going to be happening. I know I'm going to be craving these foods and I should be using these kinds of exercises. But for 30 years of my life, I had no idea. No one ever told me to focus in on that. So it's kind of like become my little mission of like, all right, how do I continue to educate humans on this? Because not all of us have the time in the world to read blogs or books or go see a sex therapist or, you know, someone like me. It just doesn't exist. So I tried to make it like tangible when it comes into our membership of where it's like, all right, cool. If you want to study, I'm going to give you a 45-minute thing. I'm going to talk about this and you're going to see maybe how that implements and what tools or exercises can I give you? How can we pair that up with your breath so you can also take care of your nervous system and treating it like it's a whole like 360 spectrum rather than I only need to focus on my sexuality or I only need to focus on my nervous system or my depression or my family or, right? Like once we realize that there's this connective thread through everything in our lives, once we start to make better decisions for ourselves, everything is going to improve. And at least in my experience, like as I start to gain knowledge on this, that's where I'm like, oh, right. Like our knowledge is truly our power when it comes to us. So what does that look like for us? How do we amplify that?
Yeah, it's crazy how if you get to like the root of why you're feeling certain things and the what needs healing, literally it's like a ripple effect and everything will get better. And it's not just like focusing on one area. It's like if you go and do the deep inner work, it just all kind of reflects and falls into place. So I'm so glad you brought that up. What is the difference between sensuality and sexuality?
This is a spicy one for people. So if we think
let's about, hear it. I want the spicy. Well,
I just feel like if we're thinking about sexuality, then people automatically go into sex, right? And usually partnered sex. They don't even consider like time with themselves as solo pleasure as something of being a part of our sexuality. Or sensuality is when we're kind of like making it bite size, right? So it's like those experiences could lead to sexuality, like bigger sexual moments, or it could just be moments of like where I make an iced coffee every morning is my favorite. And it is the most sensual experience of all time. I pour my milk into my frother. And like, as it's going in, I'm sprinkling in cinnamon and I'm just like smelling the aroma of the cinnamon and then watching this swirl all together. And for me, it's such a pleasurable moment where I'm like, oh, I know this is going to taste so friggin' good.
Oh my God, I love it.
Right? Like just like really slowing everything down so you can kind of pick it apart and be like, what does feel good for me? And like, separating the idea that feel good has to be orgasmic pleasure, right? So it's like bringing it down into what is our pleasure? What is our orgasmic pleasure? What is the purpose of both of those? What do you need in that moment? So like me at 7:15 in the morning needs that iced coffee. I don't necessarily need an orgasm at that moment. Could be nice, perhaps, but I'm like, yo, like that coffee I know is going to like set me up for my day. It's going to give me the sustenance enough for me to start to look at emails or whatever it may be. And then I feel like I'm good to go. And like when we're thinking about sexuality, orgasmic pleasure, and all of that, obviously it's going to change a little bit. For me, I am a sensualist. So paying attention to the sounds, the smell, the plush softness that gets to happen. Like I don't necessarily need to be surrounded by a soft plushy blanket and have my incense going all day. But like if I'm going to be intimate with my partner, I know I'm going to need certain things in order. So it's like for me, lighting the incense and starting to like see the smoke plume, I'm going to be like, oh. And that's going to hit differently than the way that smelling my coffee is, right? But both are pleasurable experiences. They're just going to lead to different outcomes. So it's like, all right, and when we can start to find more pleasure in our day-to-day lives, then you start to notice that in your sensual and your sexual or your sexuality life where it's like, oh, right. So maybe because I like the soft couch in my day-to-day life, maybe I'd want a soft blanket in the bedroom if that's where I'm having partnered sex and like have those feelings, you know, start to click in where it's like, no, no, no. Pleasure is great. This is wonderful. And it can lead to orgasmic pleasure with due time if the setting is correct.
How would you say that sexuality and creativity are connected?
I mean, I was a real hellion in college and created like my thesis. I went to school for photography and my whole thesis was on shadows of bodies of having sex. And so for me, I've always drawn from that. I'm a poet. So I always write when I'm in love or when I'm heartbroken. And it's like those things really fuel my creativity. But for some individuals, it takes them out of it. Like when things are feeling really good, it's hard for them to feel, you know, like they want to be creative. So I think it's important to just check in like, what lights your soul on fire? What makes you want to create? And I hate it when people only talk about creativity in the sense of like music or making something for other people to enjoy. It's like, no, a creative process can be the putting together of the coffee. It can be the organization of the books. Like it can be anything as long as like you're getting outside of the norms of life and putting your like spin on it.
So when you did your sexuality training in Bali, what are some things, because if this has kind of been a theme in your life, you've studied it and you were clearly interested and had a lot of knowledge to begin with, or else you wouldn't have done it. What surprised you when you did that training? Did you learn anything that surprised you?
I don't think I had a lot of information, honestly. I think I had the bare bones, you know, I read Cosmo when I was 16 for the 99 ways to please your man. I was in plenty of sexual scenarios beforehand, but like none of them were ever for my pleasure. I think a lot of the focus, at least for me and my sexuality, has been how do you show up for the other people? What is it like? How do you please them? What does that look like? Which I think has really taken away my voice. So when I started becoming friends with Kristen, she's Yonilicious on Instagram. She's got heaps of helpful information. She kind of turned it for me and helped me understand that like my part in that scenario was also important. And the way that I showed up for solo pleasure was equally as important. So it was much more about slowing everything down and listening to that and understanding that, yeah, so probably, you know, the 4 days after I've ovulated, I'm going to be the least horny out of anything. But I didn't have that information before I got into it. And her training is really, really robust and goes into a lot of different nooks and crannies because she doesn't want to create cookie cutter versions of her. She wants us to implement this knowledge and then figure out how are we going to help people. And for me, I think I've been given a gift to talk about really hard topics with general ease and making it kind of silly and fun and approachable. And she's got this really beautiful soft way. And she talks much more, you know, about the female empowerment and like the nitty gritty of the science sides of things too, or the archetypes that get to go along with different chakra points. And for me, I was like, first and foremost, what's a chakra? Secondly, what's an archetype? I don't understand anything. So when I walked into it, I had a lot of sexual history, like of my own lived experience, but not of one of understanding our cycles of archetypes of, you know, pleasure of different kinds of kink, of all of the different things. And I was like, whoa. So I'm a really slow learner. So I really was digesting it and being like, all right, how do I implement this? What does this look like? And especially for, you know, the female friends that I have that have never felt like they could talk about, you know, what's going on with them, or they're having this secretion, or they have a fear that their inner labia is too big, or X, Y, and Z. Like, the yoni mapping that I do means that I get to see the most vulnerable part of humans, right? And I enter into them with consent always. But it's like we get to have this non-sexualized experience, and likely is that's the first time that they're having somebody touch them without taking anything from them. And also every vulva that I see, I'm like, oh my God, they're all so different. They're all so beautiful. I always comment on something because I can't help it because I get so excited. And they're like, oh my God, no one's ever said that. Or I've never even looked at my own vulva. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, oh, right. Like, I've had the luxury of doing that because it was prompted to me in training. But most individuals have never taken a mirror to their parts and lovingly looked at themselves, you know? So it's like, oh, right. Like, really slowing it down and really getting acquainted with your own body. Because also, like, if you are going to explore in partnered pleasure, how are you going to be able to lead anyone to pleasing you? And most individuals in my sexual past, at least, I feel like have a rhythm. Like, they're like, okay, I know it works. I know I'm going to do that. And I'm like, every human is different, and every human is different every day. So it's like really kind of bringing it back into that and getting clear on what lights you up. What does feel good? And then using that voice to really amplify it out into the world rather than expecting people to just know. So there's so many nooks and crannies to it that I love diving in with people, and it just takes time, and you have to trust that person. And I'm just so grateful that I fell into the arms of, you know, my best friend who was doing this. And I was like, all right, girl, let's go. Like,
I love, let's freaking go. I love that you're bringing up how complex women are, because that is like just frequently forgotten, you know, like men quite literally are the same every single day. And women, it depends on the day and it depends on the week. It depends on the minute. And I love that you're bringing that up because it's just so beautiful. Like, it just makes me, like, when people talk about that, I get like chills just when they bring up the complexity of what it is to be a woman, because like you said, it hasn't been studied. It hasn't been taught. I just turned 26. And just within the past year, I started to learn all these things. Like, I got super into cycle syncing. I got off birth control. And now I feel like I'm living this like magical life because of it. And I'm like, why haven't I been doing this since I was like 18? And of course, everything happens in divine timing. And it happened when it was meant to. But I love that you're bringing that up because it's just my bread and butter. Like, I love talking about the complexity of it all.
And I don't know about your experience, but I got on hormonal birth control, I think, when I was 15.
Me too.
Like, the fact that they put a 15-year-old on it who was not sexually active is still so baffling to me. And to just be told that it's fine and that you can keep taking your pills and miss your period and X, Y, and Z, it just is removing us from this innate knowing that we do have. And bless my trainer, I told her like where I am in my cycle, so we know what kind of workouts we need to do. And she was like, you're my only client that's really affected by their cycle. I was like, no. I'm maybe one of the only ones that is in touch with this. Oh, and she was like, okay, we need to dive deeper in on this. And I was like, yes, for sure. Because like, the things that people say to me all the time are so crazy. Like, they're like, yeah, well, I can do whatever. And I'm like, cool. Well, you probably shouldn't be lifting heavy weights when you're menstruating.
My God. When I see a workout video and it's the woman is like, oh, like, I'm not really lifting as heavy today because I'm on my period, I want to comment and be like, go take a nap, please. Yes. Like, why are you at the gym lifting weights?
Just go rest.
Like, and like, I'm a girl's girl. I'm not judging. I just like, I'm like, oh my God. Like, I want to like, just take them home. I want to put them in my car and take them home myself.
Yeah. Like, heaven forbid we like prioritize taking care of ourselves. It's like, no. Like, keep working out, look good, be good, all of this. And it's like, you could be harming your body. Right. Yeah. And it's like, we don't really take that time to check in and listen. Like, I happened to be bleeding last week when I was lifting, and I was like, oh, I feel pretty good though. Like, I feel really strong. It was towards the end of it, blah, blah, blah. And then turns out I injured myself because I pushed too hard. And I was like, oh my God, I know better. And I still did it. Right. So it's like, I have so much compassion for people that aren't in sync with their body, that are confused about what that could look like. So the first like educational one I'm going to do in the membership is going to be on, you know, our cycles and what does it look like to pay attention to that? Because even if I can just provide one nook of knowledge that somebody doesn't know, or maybe what they could be doing in that time, or foods to be eating, or whatever it is, it's like, oh, that knowledge is power. And the amount of decades that I was a bleeding woman and sexually active and didn't pay attention to this, I'm just like, oh my God, poor little me. She needs that care and attention. She needs that information in like an easy and digestible way too. Cause I think it's really easy to fall into different TikToks or people's Instagrams that they're really going in deep. And I'm like, yo, it's too much. I don't feel a part of, like, I get that maybe you want to rub your period blood on your face, but that's a bit of a stretch for me. So no, thank you. And it's like, listen, do whatever fuels you and helps you feel more connected. But I'm like, I need tangible ways to understand this body and how I can continue to thrive in life, because I run three businesses. I'm in a loving, committed relationship. My social life is robust, and I want to be having the best sex that I could be having and also taking care of myself. So it's like listening into that and then learning how to use your voice to really advocate for it.
Yeah, it can be super overwhelming at first. Like I came off birth control for this reason. Like I knew I wanted a relationship with my body that I couldn't have if I was on birth control. And it's so overwhelming at first. Like all of the information that is just living in every place and what works for me, what doesn't work for me. But if you commit and you commit to learning what's best for you, like I think it's amazing that not even a year ago, I was on birth control, and now I like wake up and know when I'm ovulating. Like it's insane.
Yeah.
There's no feeling like it, truly. No, so
it's so wild to me. And I'm on this thing called Natural Cycles where I take my temperature.
Oh yeah.
It's the best. And
I don't take, I'm so bad with the temperature. I can't do
girl,
it.
Girl, I legitimately
me, but
had to get like something from Amazon that was like the head one, like boop, boop. Cause I was like, I need it 2 seconds, go in, go out. And, but then it tracks it. And I know like, oh, okay, cool. Next week are going to be red days, so I can't have unprotected sex, and oh, I'm probably gonna want to sleep with every single human that I meet. Like I know, like, okay, cool. So also in my ovulation time is when I should have my social activities. I'm gonna be glowing. I'm gonna have extra energy. I'm gonna want to connect with people. The pheromones that are naturally being released from my body are going to draw humans in, which is exactly why the hottest man ever in the cafe last week approached me, and I was like, oh my God. And like, dumbass me, I'm such a flirt. I was just like chatting. And he was like, oh, we should get a coffee. Blah, blah. I was like, yeah, definitely. I gave him my number as an engaged woman. I told my fiance, and I was like, babe, I'm an idiot. I just thought we were being friends. And he was like, you flirt with everyone, babe. And I was like, don't worry, my first message, married woman, but I am down to be friends.
But I love it though, because it's like, okay, you could blame astrology on some things and like, that's all fun and everything, but it's so fun to blame your menstrual cycle on things. Like, oh my God, what do you mean? Like, yeah, I gave him my number, but I'm ovulating. Like, sorry, not my fault. Like, I love that.
I mean, I do take the ownership over that. I was just like, oh my gosh, like I forget. Cause I get so in, like I get caught up in these scenarios. And then after I'm like, oh,
Of course
I'm going to draw everyone in for sure. But like, your girl need to dial that back ASAP.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I want to get back on track, because I know we don't have a lot of time and there's still so many things that I need to ask you before you go. Number one, what is yoni mapping?
Yoni mapping is the internal and external massage that I was just talking about. So basically, it's me as the facilitator.
So you're not making a map.
We are basically. So we're mapping out where your pleasure, pressure, pain, and numbness and your vulva and your vagina are. So starting to understand, where does your pleasure come from? Like for me, when I had my first yoni mapping session, I had no idea that my left inner labia was going to have more pleasure than my right inner labia. And I got to experience that because there I was in a non-sexualized scenario with someone who I knew wasn't trying to take anything from me and was just trying to help me, rather than a like in partnered play where I'm like, oh, that feels good. And then I immediately forget about it because I'm in that scenario. So it's like breaking it down into understanding the different parts of our own, you know, vulvas and vaginas. Where is there tension? Where is there stress? Where is there numbness? So you can start to work with it. Because in the same way that we get massages like on our, you know, our shoulders and our backs, because our tension is there, same thing can happen in your vagina. So it's like, okay, how do we move that? What does that look like? What do you need to talk through? Is there trauma associated with there? Do you need additional help and care afterwards? Like mapping out all of those things for that individual. And then I write up like a full write-up for the person afterwards, so they know, oh, right. Okay. When we were, you know, in the internal and the vagina part, and we treat the yoni like a clock, and say like 5 PM was really tight. It's like, okay, great. So now they're going to know, like in their own time, they can drop in and, you know, start to massage that out for themselves.
That's so fascinating. And like, I've never heard of anything like that until I started following you on social media and saw kind of the things that you were doing. So that's so fascinating. I'm sure so many women have never heard of anything like that and could benefit so much from it. And you're doing the thing.
Doing the thing. Well, what I think is really interesting is that it is something that's talked about in Australia and Bali in the UK. Like there are facilitators over there. And for my trainer specifically, she's trained 2 people in America. So I'm like, how is this not more widely talked about? There are pelvic floor doctors, and it's a very different experience because that's clinical and this is more therapeutic. So there's the benefits for all. I would never say don't go see a doctor person. I will always trust that the person knows what they need. But it's like, no, we can uncover so much when we're in this therapeutic area where we are asking for consent. Because I always laugh when I go see my OBGYN, like, they never ask. Like, hey, can I put this in you? They're telling you, I'm going to do this. Move closer here. Open here. We're going to do this. And it's like, could you ask me? Like, could you give me autonomy over my body so I could say, actually, I'm not ready yet. Right?
Yeah.
It's crummy.
Ooh. My next question was kind of like a juicy one, but you kind of took it in a different direction. But I have to ask you, I've been fascinated lately by the idea of like different types of orgasms, specifically like energetic orgasms, because it's just the kind of thing where I love learning about it. I love listening to podcasts about it, but like my brain does not comprehend yet. So do you have any experience with different types of orgasms, and what does that even mean?
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, technically every part could have an orgasm, because it's just like, I don't know what the technical definition for orgasm is, but it's basically like an explosion of energy that you get to feel, like the feel good vibes. Most individuals who have penises will have localized, you know, orgasmic energy, like in their penis or cock, whatever you want to call it. We have the ability to spread that energy everywhere. So the tantra arts go into that more in detail, and using your breath to really amplify that. So I have a workshop called Breathgasm where you can breathe yourself into orgasm. So there's, you are welcome to touch your body if you want, but trying to avoid the erogenous zone so you can start to amplify that pleasure in your body. So for me, I've had an anal orgasm, a skin orgasm, a nipple orgasm, a heart orgasm. Like, and when they happened, I was like, I'm sorry, what? Because I'm somebody who up until their 30s could never experience an orgasm with someone. So for me, it's been really revolutionary over the last 6 years of being like, oh, these things exist, like this happens. And the first time I ever had a skin orgasm, I was just like laying in bed with my then partner, and he was just like kind of bringing his hand over on my shoulder and my arm, and like out of nowhere I was like, ooh, like my body started to kind of react as if I was about to have a clitoral orgasm. And I was like, this is so interesting. And I was like, okay, great, like can you do a little bit heavier pressure, can you squeeze here? And like as he was listening, like my body was really reacting, and before I knew it, it felt like I had a full body orgasm, and no genitals were touched. And I was like, what? Like,
so would you say it's kind of like, it's like taking that energy that we as humans are used to feeling in like very specific areas and training yourself to spread it? Like, what does that even look like for someone that has never done it before?
I mean, so if we're thinking about it, I also just looked up the definition of orgasm because I'm too much of a nerd to not know this, but it's like a climax of sexual excitement, right? So, and if we're thinking about people who have penises and they're orgasming, they have a very clear liquid that gets to come out. Like it's obvious when they're having an orgasm. For people who have vulvas or identify as female, it's very different, but then it's going on to say it's characterized by feelings of pleasure centered in the genitals and experienced as an accompaniment to ejaculation. So that gets a little bit more, you know, like clinical in that side,
but it's so
like,
specific.
You know, like it gets to be something so much bigger. So if you are somebody who does have a vulva, pay attention to how your breath is during, you know, heightened climax, right? So see if you start to tense anything up. And if you do, try to soften the belly, soften the buttocks, soften the breath, try to push the breath a little bit lower down into your womb space, as if you could send your breath there. And then you can bring your fingers and like pull it up on your body and see how far can you take that energy? How far can you take that really like wonderful, beautiful feeling? And see if can it expand anymore. And maybe it goes an inch away from your vulva, right? Maybe it's just a little bit. And then maybe from there you continue to like breathe in maybe a little bit deeper into your heart and start to expand there a little bit more, and just see how far can you take those feel good energy, that experience of like, oh yes, hello. Like for me, I know when I wrap my arms around someone, like I feel like a jolt of like, yes, like somebody that I really love and I feel connected to. And I'm like, oh, a gentle little skin orgasm. And this idea that every orgasm needs to feel the same or look the same is not true, right? So for me, if I'm using a toy, like say a vibrator or something, I'm going to have the most insane clitoral orgasm for sure, because that is a powerful tool. If I'm using my hand, it feels different. It doesn't mean that one is better than the other. It just means that they have different sensations. So similarly in the body, it may not feel like you're having this like full clitoral vibrational orgasm that's going on. It's like, no, it feels different, but like, does it still feel good? Does it feel expansive? Does it make you feel like, oh yeah, this is what pleasure feels like? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So do you think that it's something like, obviously it's very subjective, looks different for everyone, doesn't look like one thing. Like for me, my brain is like, oh, I probably have to follow these steps to do this thing that people are talking about. Like, you know what I mean? But do you think it's just a matter of like the more intentional, the slower you can do it? Like if you combine those two things, it will inevitably lead you to where you're meant to go.
Yeah. I mean, because every body is different. So you could take a 10-step method in order to have a skin orgasm, but it may not work for you. And similarly, when Kristen and I host our Breathgasm, we try to let people know it's a practice, right? So it's not that you're going to do something for the first time and it's going to feel like this big explosion. It might take a while, because also if we think about, you know, when we do get into partnered pleasure or solo pleasure, how much time do you take? Do you rush it? Do you take time to really build everything up? Do you tease? Do you play? Do you use different sensations? Like, where are you at with that? How can you connect more into what makes you feel good? And then from there, continue to expand it. So like, for me, I personally love a little bit of a teasing. So if like, if I'm teasing towards the outer side of my vulva and then I bring my fingertips down my thighs, does that energy transfer there? Yes or no? If it's a no, great. Okay. Maybe not for today. Maybe if I bring my hands up towards my tummy, does that make me feel good? Do I feel like I can feel like the warmth kind of expand in my lower abdomen, and like leaning into whatever it is that feels right for you? The breath is deeply connected into our nervous system, right? So if we do pay attention to what's happening with that, if we soften and deepen the breath, usually what's going to happen is we're going to have a sense of relaxation over on our body. And I think that's generally what people like will have, this big like climactic buildup of, oh my God, this feels so good. And then the release is kind of like the, oh yeah, there it is. There's the softness. There's the opening there. We're taking up a little bit more space rather than like that restriction. And also leaning into, what's your sound like? You know, do you give yourself permission to make audible sound or to grunt or to make the ugliest face? Because porn has really messed us up in a myriad of ways. But like this idea that all orgasms are really easy, or they have to be these loud moans, or that they have to like visually look really great on the face. Like, no, I've been with some women that have some crazy faces that happen. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so intrigued. Like, how cool. And I found most men that I've had the pleasure of being with will be silent. And I'm like, wow, like we've really been conditioned from porn that women are the sound makers and that men have to be these like silent humans. So like, I'm constantly encouraging people like, no, like let it out. And like, sometimes it's a grunt that may not be the most attractive thing to me, but it's not for me all of the time, right? Like it also gets to be for them. And once everyone starts to find their voice, I think it just has this ability to also help us find our voice in our day-to-day lives. And when it comes to work or relationships or whatever that may look like, nah, I'm here for more expansion.
Do you think that like incorporating, like you mentioned earlier, like the specific blanket, the incense burning, like, do you think incorporating those like sensual aspects help you be more present and be in your body more, therefore allow you to go deeper in this way?
For sure. I mean, well, for me, because I am a sensualist. So there is a erotic blueprint quiz that you can take. It's free. I think it takes like 24 hours to send you the results if you don't pay for it. But it breaks it down, I believe, into 5. So there's a sensualist, which is somebody who's going to be turned on by, you know, the senses, all of them. There's like the pure sex person who just only focuses on like genital sex and like doesn't really care about anything else. There's the kink person who will have interest in different taboos. There's 2 more. There's one that like groups all of them together. I'm sure I have something listed.
I feel like I've heard of this before and I know exactly what they are, but of course they're not in my brain now.
Sexual, kinky, shapeshifter includes all of them.
Oh, and energetic is one.
Yes. There we go. Thank you. So the energy sides of things. So paying attention to that. And those are people who I feel like have worked with that, right? So like necessarily my fiance, who is a very normal individual who has not dove into the energetic sides of anything really, is not going to be that. He's probably going to be more the sexual based. And like, I'm a shapeshifter. So I will love something that's super sensual. And then also I'll just want to, you know, have sex and get that over with, or I'm going to be kinky and I'm going to want, you know, a little paddling or a little tying up or whatever that may be. So I think it's just important to be curious with yourself. What does that look like for you? How does that feel for you? Does the softness, does the smell, like if the television is on, I will not be interested in sex. If Vanderpump Rules is on, I'm going to be focused on that. Unfortunately, you know, it's like, I want to be there in that moment, but that's going to take me out of it. So it's just paying attention to what ignites you. Give yourself permission to, you know, dive into that and have a little bit of fun with that. And the week before, we did that in the membership. So you can kind of go and watch that for yourself if you start to get a little curious and having fun with it. Cause it's like, how do we amplify those? How do you connect more in with that? How do you celebrate exactly who you are rather than who you've told you should be?
So I want to circle back to, since we're kind of running out of time, I want to circle back to something that you brought up in the beginning, because you mentioned how specifically women, I would say, carry a lot of shame with them. And a lot of shame comes up with the topic of sexuality and everything that you're doing. As much as they might want to be a part of it and to heal and to immerse themselves in it, the shame does come up. So I do want to take a minute to share my story with you because I just feel like maybe it could help someone. I don't know. I feel like this has kind of come up a lot in my adult life. So I just would love to know your perspective on this. But I would say that I discovered orgasm at a very young age, which I didn't think was like common at all until I kind of started like seeing videos and like listening to podcasts. And I know it's not just me. Like I know like other women might be able to relate to this. Like I was super, super young when I discovered orgasm and I didn't like know it was bad or think it was bad until I was told it was bad. And like, what were my parents going to do? Like they had to make sure I knew what was acceptable in the world. Like I totally understand. But I think I brought a lot of shame and insecurity into my adult life because of it, because I would think back and be like, oh, God, like my parents and my family must have been so ashamed of me. They must have thought I was disgusting, like just mortifying. So I don't think it's affected my sex life as an adult, really. Like, I think if anything, I'm kind of like more in tune because of it. But I think like the insecurity and the shame is like very deep rooted within me because of it. And even if my brain knows that I don't need to feel that way, I think like it's just the kind of thing that in our society, like I'm not learning how to release that shame. It's just kind of like it's just a part of me now. So what are your thoughts? Because I'm sure a lot of women, whether it's not like my story, it might be their own story. How can a person start to kind of alchemize their shame around sexuality in like the applicable ways?
So basically, I think when we're talking about shame, it's important to first and foremost point out that it is the lowest vibrational energetic emotion out of the sphere. So it is the one that we keep in the dark. It's a thing that we don't talk about. And I know for me, I also discovered orgasmic pleasure as a young kid too. And I would like hump my bedpost or a bear or whatever. And my parents just were negligent, so they didn't notice. But like, I have had a lot of conversations with other individuals who were told that it was bad, that they shouldn't do that, that's reserved for only special time, you know? And I think the language around it is really important. So if you are someone who has had, you know, any sort of shameful experience, which also, you know, trigger warning, I've had a lot of sexual assaults in my past. When I get into those realms, it's like, oh, well, if it felt good while that bad thing was happening, then what's wrong with me? Right. And we tell ourselves a lot of stories. So first and foremost, I would say therapy is definitely a good move to go into, to find somebody who's going to be, you know, outside of your brain or in your personal life where they can just be there and support you and you can talk about it. Working with somebody in the realm who does want to shift and move those emotions. Breath work is a great modality to use for that also. Trauma release exercises are also helpful to kind of lean into, to explore that. And for me, the thing that's always worked for me is journaling, right? So like, what did that feel like? What did I close off within myself? How did I speak to myself from then? What does it look like in my current relationships? And like just everything with sexuality and sensuality to me is just remain curious. Like get interested in what it looks like for all of those feelings to come up. What does it look like to talk about that with other people and start to like just shine that light on it so it has an opportunity to move? Like the more that you keep it just with yourself, I found, at least in my experience of keeping a lot of secrets, it killed me. It hindered me from being able to feel even more, being able to feel connected. So it's like no part of me wanted to go and tell my fiance that I gave another human my number, but also I don't keep secrets, right? So, hey, I messed up. I did this. This is how I rectified it. I care about you. I want to be with you. And the more that I lead with honesty with this individual, the deeper our connection is, meaning it's the deeper our sexual connection gets to be, right? Like, and this idea that we're never going to be attracted to anyone else because we found our person or whatever, like that's not a thing. Ryan and I are constantly talking about how we think people are hot. So it's like, try to take those shameful experiences or situations and just move them. Like, I could see somebody who I would find really attractive that I want to sleep with, and I could keep that in my head, or I could tell him and then have it be out in the world and be like, okay, cool. Next, like, let's go get ice cream. You know, like we don't have to dwell on it. But the more that I keep for myself, who has previous experiences of being an emotional cheater, I can run a lot of stories in my head constantly of how I think I need better. I need more. I need X, Y, and Z. But if I am then, you know, acting in a way that is out of alignment with myself, I'm going to create those shameful moments for me. And then I'm going to think, man, I am too sexual. Man, I do want too much. And then I am going to be hard on myself. But it's like, no, we're all humans. We've all had previous experiences in our past that other people have had opinions on. Does it make them true for us in our current moment? Yes or no? I don't know. That comes down to your specific experience. But for me, most of the time, I'm harder on myself and I keep myself from growing or from connecting to others. So bringing everything out into the light, talking to a trusted person, ideally a therapist who is trained in this kind of realm, so they can help you uncover those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what we resist persists, of
Yeah.
course. And the more you keep things in, like I've noticed, like I didn't speak about any of that for most of my life up until very, very recently. And when you say things like that out loud, you're like, oh, it doesn't actually sound nearly as bad saying it out loud as it's been sounding in my head for the last 25 years.
Yeah.
So well said. I know you have to run. I could talk to you for another 3 hours, so maybe you can come on again in the future. But please tell everyone where they can find you, where they can find you in the world, on social media, where can they find you?
My Instagram is Sarah Silverstein, SaraSilverstein. SarahSil.com for all things sensuality and breath work. Come and join our membership if you have a vulva and you want to dive in. I'm going to start talking a lot more on there and having a little bit more fun diving in deeper on these topics that are super important to me. And if you're ever interested in aura photography, we've got Inner Light Aura, which is always fun. We partner up with other small businesses all the time in Philadelphia and New York. And we just love to, shine lights on things. Allow people to celebrate themselves, whether it be, from their aura and how it impacts everyone around them to their nervous system and their anxiety or to their sexuality. So many depths that I would love to dive in with you. And also, I'm always here. So if you got questions, slide in those DMs on Instagram. I got you.
Oh, thank
Thank
you
you.
so much for everything that you're doing. And it was truly an honor to have you on the podcast
You
again.
are a dream. I love it. I love it. Awesome. Thank you, sweetheart. I'll talk soon.